Global real estate markets have had a bumpy ride since the onset of the pandemic almost 5 years ago. But as we flip the calendar to 2025, prospects for real estate investors look to be improving. Conditions remain ripe for potentially attractive returns in real estate debt, which continues to gain ground as a mainstream institutional asset class. On the equity side, we may have seen the bottom for valuations, while transaction levels appear to be on the rise. But questions remain, including the potential impact of the US election on global real estate markets, and how factors like potential tariffs and even questions around the independence of the US Fed are factoring into the equation. These and other more structural questions create a complex landscape for investors to navigate. Welcome to the Barings 2025 Global Real Estate Outlook, where our panel of experts from across the world and spanning the real estate debt and equity markets will discuss and debate what 2025 may have in store for investors. The following conversation was broadcast as a live webinar for Barings clients. If you'd like to access a written version of this conversation adapted from the full discussion, please visit barings.com. With that, here is your moderator for the discussion, John Åkerblom.
Welcome everyone to the 2025 Global Real Estate Outlook. Our theme this year is navigating a shifting landscape, and the landscape is absolutely shifting. I'm very pleased to be with my panel, who I'll ask to introduce themselves, starting with Nasir.
Hi, I'm Nasir Alamgir. I head up our U.S. and European real estate debt.
Hi, I'm Maureen Joyce. I head up U.S. real estate equity.
Hello, I'm Nick Pink. I head up European real estate equity.
And I'm John Åkerblom. I'm responsible for U.S. and European real estate. I'm going to start by asking this question. What is the market wrong about with respect to commercial real estate, Nasir?
That's a really good question.
And I agree.
It is, yes. I'm going to focus on the real estate debt aspect of this. And I think the market is generally looking at real estate debt as an alternative, as something that isn't run-of-the-mill. And I think the more you look at it, you see that it has a lot of characteristics and qualities that are similar to many fixed income products. The nice thing is it has negative correlation to many of those other fixed income products, but that's the part that I think they get wrong. They think of it as a little bit more esoteric than it actually is.
Maureen.
I think a lot of market participants are taking their foot off the sustainability gas pedal. Certainly with the new administration, that makes sense to a lot of people, but the arc of history is long, and I think we're going to find out that it's going to be really important that we build, renovate, and create sustainable, and most importantly, resilient real estate, because that's how we're going to create value. That's how we're going to be good stewards of our clients' capital.
Terrific. Nick?
I don't know how controversial this is, but probably not so controversial with this audience. But I would say the market, currently at least, is indiscriminately discounting office. I mean, a little bit linked to Maureen's commentary around sustainability. I mean, it's very, very clear to us that the thesis for prime office, sustainable office, has been made. Occupationally, at least, we're seeing really, really strong return to the office in Europe. We're seeing strong rental value growth, very limited supply. And I think right now, capital markets just can't quite see the opportunity in the office space for the right office space. And I think that will change quite quickly over the next 12 to 24 months.
Terrific. Well, speaking of being wrong, we did this a year ago. Many of us participated. Nasir, you're off the hook because I don't think you had a comment last year. But we wanted to go back to our predictions of last year and what did we get right and what did we get wrong? So I'll ask you, Nick, first. Do you recall your prediction from last year and how well did you do?
I do recall certainly two of them. In terms of what we were right about, we were actually spookily right about the pace and the size of interest rate cuts we would see in Europe. In Europe and the UK. So we predicted 325 basis point cuts, and we've seen them. We're not yet at the end of the year, but I think that was pretty accurate. In the UK too. So pretty much spot on in terms of the policy rate. In terms of what I was wrong about, and I'll take full responsibility for this, I said we would win the Euros. That's soccer, football. Mm. You know, I knew it was highly unlikely. We actually made the final. So, you know, one step away.
One step away.
Yes.
That's a common set of circumstances.
Unfortunately, it is, yes.
I understand. Maureen, what did we get right? What did we get wrong?
Well, I moderated last year, so I was a little, I didn't have quite the bold prediction that other people had. My prediction was that Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift would be engaged, and I got that wrong. One thing, though, that we did talk about a little bit last year was that the expectation with the wall of maturities and the residential debt market that there would be more sort of lowercase distress in multifamily. I think we got the timing wrong, but that, as it didn't really happen that much in 2024, but I think there is going to be more distress and there's going to be more opportunity to buy good assets with distressed capital structures going forward.
And that's a theme that I think it's probably worth our talking about a little bit further on. The idea of good assets with distressed capital structures is really the form of distress that I think we've expected to see and that I think we'll continue to expect to see. Well, my prediction was that the 10-year Treasury would remain at or above 4%, hovering in that area, that the market would come to peace with it, that ultimately the world would continue to turn, transactions would continue to happen. And I just want to go ahead on the record and say I absolutely nailed it. But I think we operate in a market where we believe that we're not going to get bailed out by rate cuts. And that's sort of a common theme for us as a business. We operate on the assumption of a higher rate. That gives us some room to operate to the extent that things go otherwise. And I think that's the way we'll continue to look at our business. Okay, so the big news this past month has been the United States election. I'm going to ask each of you, and Nick, counterintuitively, I'm going to start with you, even though you're in Europe. How do you think the election outcomes will influence your business?
Well, look, it's really early to tell. Obviously, he's not yet in government, and, you know, manifesto rhetoric, how much of that's going to make it into policy, who knows? And the US, let's face it, is a fairly different place in terms of the size of the deficit relative to his first term. So, again, how much room he really has before bond markets potentially punish some rash decision making remains to be seen. I think I've seen all sorts of predictions about the impact on European economies. I think it will be, ultimately, it's going to depend on, you know, how far the potential imposition of tariffs goes. It's going to be very uneven. Probably, you know, many economies in Europe that trade with the US are trading in the service sector. And I don't think that's going to get hit by tariffs at this point. So I think it's more of a focus on, you know, where are the big manufacturing relationships with the US. I think Germany would be a potential problem area with, you know, particularly with the car industry, which is already suffering to a large extent on the back of the global economic slowdown and on the back of the, you know, the shift to EV. So I think, you know, Germany is already an economy that's, you know, facing some economic difficulties given the shape of its economy and given some of the political pressures that country has right now. So I think we'd certainly see Germany as potentially a market where we may see additional distress, but also some opportunity coming through as well. So I think from an opportunistic investing perspective, Germany could throw up some quite interesting deals over the next 12 months. I think, you know, high level, maybe the shift to deglobalization and, you know, a nationalist trend keeps capital home. You know, I mean, that's been a trend through difficult points in the cycle, through the pandemic. Latterly, I think, again, capital has been probably less inclined to go outside of its region. So maybe capital, again, becomes a little bit more static and we see people investing in their home markets less inclined to go further afield.
Well, on behalf of Americans, I want to say I'm shocked that you would think that an American politician could make a rash decision. And I say, how dare you? Maureen, how about you?
Nick touched upon it. Tariffs, that's a big question mark. Massive deportation. Both of those can lead to inflation, which will be tough for the broader economy to handle again, but it's also going to mean that interest rates aren't going anywhere. And there was a big expectation previously that interest rates were going to decline over the course of 2025. I don't see that happening. I do think some of his policies, if they get enacted, and who knows whether they will be inflationary. So it's going to keep interest rates up. What that means from a real estate perspective is input costs for new construction are going to increase. Construction costs will increase with inputs like lumber coming from Canada. If there's tariffs put on those, certainly if there's deportation of immigrants, many of whom work in the construction trades, particularly in the south market, southern markets, that's going to put pressure on labor and labor costs, driving costs up. The other thing, though, on a positive side, if deregulation happens, smart deregulation, it may spur some more innovation in some industries. It certainly could have an impact on banking and what that means in terms of credit availability and spreads. is a question mark. Hopefully it's positive, but that's really Nasir's bailiwick. So I'm going to leave him to talk about deregulation if you want to.
I wanted to, but you already stole my thunder. So I'm not sure.
But
I
you
have
know
the
a whole lot more about it
you
than I do.
You both stole all my thunder, right? You're talking about things that are affecting construction costs. You're talking about things that are affecting the banking regulation. Look, you left me with not a lot, so I'm going to go with one bold prediction, which is the executive branch is going to have more influence over monetary policy. And that may not happen over the next 18 months, as long as Powell still has his job. But to the extent that he doesn't, then we'll see more influence over monetary policy from the executive branch. What that means is hard to predict, but again, it would feel like all of that's going to lead to inflationary pressure. But the deregulation, I think, is something that could help the broader capital markets, especially with respect to banks and bringing liquidity back into the system to finance acquisitions, to finance refinance deals, I think is important. So it's healthy for real estate, it's healthy for the economy.
So what do you think that could mean, deregulation in banking, with regard to how banks are treating the wall of maturities, how they're dealing with, you know, loans that aren't, they're performing, not performing loans, but are facing maturities? Do you think the lighter touch means there's going to be more extend and pretend or some other treatment of loans on banks' books?
Yeah, and maybe deregulation is the wrong word.
Yeah.
The lack of re-regulation is probably the right term to use. I think what you're going to see is, yes, banks will have the ability to push off some of their troubled loans for longer. Some of the capital requirements they have with respect to some of those might be eased, or at least eased in the background, to allow them to bring capital back into the system. I think everybody realizes the banks are essential for the functioning of a real estate market, and they have been absent from that market for quite some time, for the last 2 years, really. So that deregulation, that lack of re-regulation, will take many forms, but easing the capital for some of these troubled loans will be one of the essential ones. It does mean that wall of maturity pushes out further in terms of loans being rolled to the following years as you work through those problems. But at the same time, the influx of capital into private markets, probably the expansion of Freddie and Fannie into the multifamily specific sectors, will mean that capital will be flowing back into real estate.
So I'm going to go ahead and make a more the bull case, particularly in the near term. I think there's a near term question and a longer term question. In the near term, if one is a believer in the bull case, lower taxes and lower regulation leads to greater extent of economic activity, greater liquidity into the system, the tide raising all boats, and a transaction volume improving in the early years of the next administration. And I think that the question for us is, how do we take advantage of those opportunities in the near term while keeping an eye on the longer term potential ramifications? So in other words, if we were to benefit as investors from a flood of liquidity into the market and then understand how to move prudently as long term inflation climbs, I think that's going to be the balancing act that we're going to make. And I think the proponents of the administration would say that the infusion of liquidity and risk-taking into the market is a positive, and that ultimately will make up for any potential risks. I don't know if I believe all of that, but I understand the point, and I think it's going to be a pretty active year in 2025. Okay, so this year, debt has been the belle of the ball, if you will, in real estate, probably for the last 4 years. If we think about on a relative value basis, which we at Barings generally, that's how we think. We're always thinking about relative value. Where is the best risk-adjusted return anywhere in the globe, anywhere in the capital stack? Real estate debt has been the answer to that question. It has been the best risk-adjusted return. Talk about 2025. What do you foresee for real estate debt? How do you see equity emerging to play a complementary role in that picture?
So I think some of the things we talked about with respect to the banks and that wall of maturity extending means that the opportunities for real estate debt will still look attractive in 2025, but there will be additional liquidity into the system because there is going to be some easing of that re-regulation. And so there will be some liquidity from banks back into real estate, which means that valuations feel like they're bottoming out and you're seeing green shoots on the equity side. Mm-hmm. So the nice thing is, you can probably look at both spaces and see relative value and see opportunities to deploy, whether it's debt or equity. The rate of growth within the equity valuations is going to be probably the biggest question mark, and I'll defer to my two colleagues on my right to answer that question for you. But I definitely think that debt still looks like an opportunity, but we're seeing those. I'm seeing those green shoots on the equity side as well, which is great for debt because improving valuations just means that your debt is more secure.
Maureen, so the question for you, I'll put it more simply. Can we have it all? Can we have a massively functional debt market where we can make competitive returns as well as a solid equity market? And how?
Short answer, absolutely yes. And how? For the equity markets to function, we need the debt markets. And sure, it was really great when interest rates were super low. But over the course of my career, a 4.5 interest rate, treasury rate is not unusual. The last 10 years has been unusual. So real estate can function very well. Equity real estate can function and prosper when you have a treasury at 10%. The big thing—
At 4%.
At 4%, geez, thanks.
The treasury goes to 10%.
Yeah, we have a problem. The most important thing is a strong economy, because that's what ultimately drives increases in rents. That's what ultimately drives increase in value. I mean, yes, cap rate compression drove a lot of value over the last 10 years, but what we really need is top line growth. And I think the economy looks really good now and going into 2025. And it's a combination of policies and legislation that's been put in place already, whether it's the CHIPS Act or the IRA, or money flowing through that's going to have a multiplier effect on the economy, reshoring through a certain impact on from manufacturing. So that's really important for a functioning equity market. And I see next year as being a particularly good vintage year, because a combination of good strong liquidity in the market, but also strong growth. So you take those two acts, that legislation from the current, soon to be previous administration, and layer on perhaps the lighter touch, the lower taxes from the next administration, I think it's going to be a good year for growth, a good couple years for growth, which is important for equity real estate.
Terrific. All right, Nick, so far we're ebullient. What do you have to say as respects Europe?
Well, I'm not going to be controversial. I'm going to agree with my esteemed colleagues. But I mean, I think Europe is, I'm getting to the same answer, but I think Europe is in a very different place. I mean, primarily because of European economic growth, which is, you know, lackluster to say the least, with one or two bright spots. And I think everything that's going on here and everything that's going on globally, you know, in terms of deglobalization and political risk, is only going to hurt Europe more in the near term in terms of our economic performance. And I think what that's probably going to lead to is perhaps a faster pace and a deeper outcome in terms of policy rate cuts over the next 12 months, which, you know, is a good thing in the context, I think, of prime real estate. Certainly those markets where we're most active, gateway cities, undersupplied markets, where the rental value growth outlook is still strong, even in those weaker economic economies. So look, I think we're fairly positive about the prospect for a gradual improvement in property values through 2025. We found stability probably 6 or 9 months ago in most European markets, and I think we're now sort of at the cusp of a gradual improvement in values, which is going to encourage capital back into the market, for sure. I think maybe we're underestimating the weight of money that could come back in and the pace that could come back in as we begin to see policy rates trend down in Europe. So I'm positive about the equity prospects. I mean, as Nazir said, you know, it's we rarely need functioning equity markets. We need deal making for Nazir to find the right opportunity. This isn't, you know, I'm sure he's not focused on the refinancing wall. It's about new deals and the ability to finance those. So, you know, I would hope that we can both win.
And I just want to say, I think Nick's point about gradual improvement in value is going to be the same here in the U.S. We're not going to have steep increases in values next year. I think it's going to be a couple years that we have to dig ourselves out of that hole. But the good news is that values have reset, as Nasir said, and that's a good starting point for us to acquire assets, to take advantage of the stronger economy that I think we're going to see over the next 2 years.
Can I just make one more point? What I also say very encouragingly in Europe, and probably ahead of my expectations, is we're seeing core capital come back, which obviously is the ultimate engine room for all of us. If core capital is back, your value-add investor has an exit. That's been lacking in the market. That's been the blockage. And again, I think, you know, as we see values improve at the prime end of the market, that demand will come back, which is really important.
I'll go ahead and speak on behalf of our Australian colleagues. We don't have anyone from Australia here today, time zones and such. But what I would say is I think they would say tell a similar story. Valuation stabilized. interest rates higher, but at a level where the market can function, relatively functional debt market, and positive fundamentals at work in that market. So I think it's a common theme that we're seeing around the globe after what really has been, to some extent, a punishing handful of years for real estate. So brighter lights, greener shoots in 2025. So let's talk about what's different in 2025 from what we saw in 2024. How do you foresee the market's operation and in your business? And Maureen, I'll start with you.
Well, in two words, the election. That's going to cause some differences in 2025. In more words, I think it's what we've just said. The impact of the election is going to be meaningful on the economy, on the property markets, for a variety of reasons, whether it's inflationary pressure or a lighter touch on regulation that may bring more liquidity and potentially more growth. Last year, we entered the year, I think our theme last year was things coming into focus. We entered the year last year with a lot of uncertainty. We were still, you know, getting through the impacts of inflation, really high inflation. That didn't settle out till mid-year. We were still, I think, feeling the shock of the rapid increase, or to us, it was a rapid increase in interest rates. So we had to settle through that. And that meant that values were still uncertain. And as we've all pointed out, they seem to have bottomed out. It took about 8 quarters, which I think we all said was likely to happen. The first negative return in the MPI was in the fourth quarter of 22. It just turned positive in the third quarter of 23. So that sets a good foundation for going into 2025. So the differences are going to be coming from a lot of uncertainty to a slightly firmer position next year. I think with the change in the administration, there's still some uncertainty, but it's something that I think people are hoping ends up being more positive in the sense that we do have stronger growth in 25 than we had in 24.
Nasir, same for you.
I think that the administration's going to move a lot faster because they only have 4 years.
Maybe right? Only two.
Maybe. But it's right, there isn't another four beyond this unless we have some change to historical norms. So if the executive branch moves more quickly, I'm going to go back to the influence over monetary policy being potentially the biggest risk, because the last time that happened was during the Nixon era, and you saw significant amounts of inflation. Mm-hmm. And I think that creates lots of problems across the board. So that, to me, is one of the big X factors that we would have to see in 2025. And because the administration only has 4 years, they're going to move a lot faster. And maybe only two.
And we say only two just because they've got complete control of Congress, and that tends not to last. That tends to be transitory no matter how popular the administration becomes. All right, so let's talk about opportunities. I think what we're all saying is that we've seen better stabilization in the market. We think that there's better liquidity. We think that transaction volume is likely to increase. I think we all believe that. So where are the opportunities? And you're going to get bonus points, Nick, for being brief to the point, so I'll hit you first.
Okay.
Where are the opportunities, Nick?
Yeah. Well, I'll defer on the bonus points from the get go because I struggle with brevity.
The brevity isn't optional.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll do my best. So, in terms of opportunity, like, I think look, Europe is in a very different place to the US. There will be some decoupling from an interest rate policy perspective, clearly economically. But what I'm telling investors is, look, a lot of the positive structural fundamentals that we've all ridden over the last cycle are still there for real estate, for prime real estate in our market. So unfortunately, it's predictable, but I'm going to be focusing very much on where we focused over the last 5-10 years, which is in or trying to get on the back of the tailwinds that we all know are still there. So, you know, I'm talking about the bigger trends, the demographic trends, the political trends, deglobalization, decarbonization, all of those things are pointing us still very firmly in the direction of residential and logistics in Europe. I think those trends obviously are dynamic through time. So I think you have to understand how those trends change and what that means for demand. And I think, you know, given the economic outlook in Europe, demand is a lot more patchy. So I think that, you know, the key for us really is trying to find those pockets of demand and, you know, and respond by creating the space or acquiring the space that tenants want to occupy. So from a logistics perspective, I think we're very focused on prime logistics corridors in Europe. I think, you know, the political risks we've just talked about and, you know, the potential for trade wars I think all of that could intensify demand for prime logistics space as we see, you know, the trends for reshoring, nearshoring intensify in the near term as supply chains respond. So I think logistics is going to be a really interesting spot in Europe. Residential too, you know, still in many markets, very, very immature relative to the US. So we're probably focusing now more on those early mover advantages. So I'd particularly pick out southern European markets. Student accommodation, we've seen a real pickup in, you know, the impact of international students. And increasingly in Europe, you know, not just in the UK, which is, you know, has a big mature student market, we've seen a lot of locations now wake up to the fact that that's a real demand driver, a real revenue generator. They've begun to, you know, offer English language courses at universities all across Europe. And so it's trying to get on the back of that trend. What's driving demand? What's driving growth? So we're very focused on PBSA in markets like Spain and Italy. That's where we see an opportunity as an early mover advantage.
Very significant change from where we would have been, I don't know, 5-7 years ago, when you would never have said that Southern Europe would be leading a recovery. If you think about where Greece was or Spain,
yeah, even, indeed.
And how things have changed. So cyclicality is a fact of life in real estate that we're always mindful of. Maureen, so two points of opportunity for bonus points. Brevity, number one, and counterintuitive. So if it's...
I'm going to lose on the second one.
Okay,
but
got it.
Brevity, I got. Housing, because we need it. Retail, both necessity and lifestyle, because we want it. Consumers are shopping. They have cash in their pockets, and they're not only doing it online. They're going to lifestyle centers that offer restaurants. They offer stores. They offer experience.
Terrific. Nasir?
This may be less bold, but I'm going to say office, right? And because you actually have a lot of statistics that support a recovery in the office, or at least a bottoming out of it, leasing activities picking back up to pre-pandemic levels. Now, granted, there's a lot of vacancy that needs to be absorbed, but I don't think we can discount. I'm going to go back to the administration. You have a pro-business president coming into office, and business wants people back in the office 5 days a week. And if you start doing that in the federal government, and that goes beyond, I think you will see office recover probably faster than people predict.
And I agree with Nasir. And the other thing about office, again, values have reset. Office has often, over the course of my career, started with basis. And you have to start with a low basis. You have to invest capital. A lot of this office needs a lot of capital, but you will get winning office properties if you do that.
Well, I agree. I think that the winners are going to be those assets, and this is not new for this year, but I think it'll probably mean more. Those assets that are less dependent upon people in terms of to allow them to function. So I think we'll have some challenges in things like hotels. I think senior housing, places where the workforce population may be at greater risk if immigration policy changes and market conditions deviate meaningfully. And again, we come back to those asset classes that are able to transmit NOI into cash flow with as little friction between the two as possible. So you think about storage, you think about logistics, you think about other areas. If you think about outdoor storage, which I suppose is a subset, where does the property produce cash from its NOI, and how efficient is it in doing so? Okay, so we're getting to the end. We're going to wrap us up. I want a bold. This is a bold. We're all wearing pretty muted colors.
Why are you looking at me?
I'm looking at you, Nick. We're all wearing pretty muted colors. I'm as bold as anyone, so maybe I'll go first. The bold prediction for 2025. My bold prediction for 2025 is that values will recover a little faster than we expect. Transaction activity will be more robust than anyone predicts. And I believe that the Treasury will be slightly down by this time next year. The 10-year. Okay, so that's my bold. I don't know if it's that bold. Maybe I need to work on my boldness, but I'm going to throw it to Nasir, see if he can be more bold than me.
Bold prediction number one, your wardrobe is less bold next year. bold prediction number two is that Powell doesn't make it through 2025.
That is bold.
That's my bold prediction.
Anybody who knows me knows I'm not bold. So, John, I hate to disappoint. I'm measured. But I'm going to go back to where I started. There's a lot of people who are taking, as I said, their foot off the gas pedal of sustainability. I think that's actually going to continue, maybe even heighten, because if we really do have a pro-growth economy, part of that's, it's all about innovation. And there's a lot of innovators thinking about ways to decarbonize, to be more efficient. And I think that's going to continue this year.
Excellent. And Nick?
So I'm going to be bold on policy rates and say in Europe, at least we could see those trend down towards low twos by the end of next year, which I think is quite punchy. But I think it's a reflection of the weakness in European economies. So I think there'll have to be a policy response that's probably more aggressive than maybe we expect right now. I think that will, or should at least, support some, you know, renewed activity in our sector. So I'm going to suggest that maybe we get back close to 5-year volume levels in Europe by the end of 2025. And one final prediction. We don't have, the World Cup's actually not until 2026. But 2 years out, I am still going to predict we win it.
And we being who?
England.
England, okay. I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood where we were coming from. Well, great. Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you to the panel. Thank you for tuning in. Panels like this are fun for us. We hope we've provided some insight. But what we like even better is the opportunity to engage with you, our clients. Please reach out to your Barings contact. If you'd like to submit a question on ON24, we'll read them on an ongoing basis. Maybe we'll do a follow-up in the mid-year. But for now, have a safe and healthy 2025, and thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Barings 2025 Global Real Estate Outlook. As mentioned up front, if you'd like to access a written version of this conversation adapted from the full discussion, please visit Barings.com. And for more conversations on asset classes ranging from high yield and private credit to real estate debt and equity, please follow Streaming Income on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.